Many of us can make people laugh. Not everyone can earn a living making people laugh. Those that do not only have guts, but also the smarts to rise to the top and get paid to do what they love. Author Joe Randazzo is one of them, a former editor of The Onion and past creative director of AdultSwim.com. Certainly has a good idea of what makes people laugh and how to parlay it into a career, which is why he has just written the new book, Funny on Purpose, The Definitive Guide to an Unpredictable Career in Comedy. In the book, he provides tips and guidance on how the comedy world works, how to break in, and offers a primer on the various paths aspiring comedians may take to realize their dreams. Again, the title of the book is Funny on Purpose, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Joe Randazzo to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
It seems to me that the key word in the title is unpredictable.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when I was first sort of formulating the book concept and book idea, you know, working with my agent on it, coming up with the pitch and the proposal, we were sort of landing on this. Couldn't get around this idea that I have a lot of skepticism about how-to books in general, and sort of anybody who can try to position themselves as having the answers or sort of series of steps that people can take in any career that will, if not guarantee, then at least make some sort of promise about helping to guide a particular path to success. So we wanted to really be clear about that and sort of honest about that and right up front, right in the title. I mean, on the book cover, it's actually, the subtitle's actually printed larger than the main title, Funny on Purpose, but just this idea that no one takes the same route. It's always a circuitous path. Everybody's is different. I wanted to try to lay out my perspective on it, but back it up with all the great interviews with people who have, you know, had success in comedy, all of whom had vastly, vastly different paths, so that there's no one direct route. Sort of get that out of the way right away, and then talk about the stuff that we can sort of talk about and find the trends and patterns and insecurities and doubts that all of these people who've managed to make it have still shared.
I want to get to the interviews in a second because it's a fascinating part of the volume. But before that, does it help if, because some of it is obviously luck and what happens, but does a decision have to come of, okay, I want to have a career in comedy, of whether I want to be in what we would say in broadcasting, you know, you want to be in front of the camera or behind the camera?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a place to start. A lot of comedians, people who work in comedy, myself included, started out wanting to be performers, you know, but no matter what genre of comedy you're going to work in, with the exception of improv, you need to have writing skills. You have to have a voice. You need to be able to write material first. If no one else is going to give you material to read on camera, then you got to write it for yourself. But then what happens is, you know, there's more jobs available writing, because it takes, especially in TV and online too. It takes, you got to put more effort kind of laying the groundwork for great material. 10 writers or 5 writers will write the great funny lines that one Will Ferrell or Kristen Wiig can say. So you will, part of that circuity and part of that unpredictableness is that you may think you're going to wind up on one side of the camera, but you actually wind up on the other. And it's the reverse too. Like, sometimes people who start out as writers wind up working on a late night show or something like that and find themselves appearing more and more in front of the camera. You know, Conan O'Brien being a
great example,
example of that. Yeah, he was a writer in college, a writer on The Simpsons, a writer on SNL, and then found himself now being the face of late night television.
When it comes to the interviews, how did you pick the people that you wanted to talk to? Because, again, it's all varieties and many, many different paths.
Yeah, I tried to just sort of tick off the list of the people I respect most. Practically speaking, people to whom there were relatively few circles of connection. You know, some of the people I know directly, some of the people I approached through Twitter and that sort of democratizing digital platform like that, where you can actually reach out to comedy legends like Judd Apatow and stuff. And some of it, I just, you know, had some help in tracking down. I tried to get as diverse a field as I could, but, you know, there are limitations to that. There are some people who are just not available with their schedules or didn't want to talk or never replied to my emails or whatever the case may be. But I tried to cover as broad a spectrum as I could, people who've been working for a long time versus people who've been working for a shorter time, from different points of view, mainstream to abstract, and just tried to cover as much as I could.
And with that, and as you said, there's so many different ways. There's no one path. There's no silver bullet that's going to get you a successful career. But what are the takeaways? What's the through line of all of these people of what they've done?
Well, you know, I started out doing the interviews. And I did a few of them actually for my book proposal before Chronicle, my publisher, bought it. But I started out with a few boilerplate questions. And one of the questions was, what's the worst advice that you've ever gotten? And the response that I got to that more often than any other was to have a backup plan. It seems like such a natural thing to do. But because in the field of comedy in particular, anything in the arts, I think, but in comedy in particular, where you're really putting yourself forward and it's very competitive and there's no real metrics for gauging success, especially when you're first starting out, if you always have that backup plan sitting right beside you, it's always sort of in your periphery, it makes it a little bit harder, takes away some of the desperation and hunger to push yourself through those inevitably dark and difficult times of the other traits that everybody in comedy has in common, which is anxiety, self-doubt, laziness, procrastination, insecurity. All of those qualities that every human being to some degree or another has are especially prevalent to those I talk to who work in comedy, and I can also say with some experience myself. So you need to be able to work through those things, use those things, in fact, to your advantage, make them your strengths, and not be overly reliant on a safety net. You know, I mean, I think also another thing was, and this was even before I started writing the book, but something I've just noticed in working with a lot of comedy people, that the people who work harder than anyone else inevitably believe that they are the laziest people on earth and that they're working so hard to keep everyone from finding out. I swear to God, this is like down the line. Hardest working people think that they're lazy slobs.
It is, it's interesting. You have an interview with Joan Rivers in here, which was done shortly before she passed. And there's really so many gems in what she says here in the interview. But two things I want to point out. One is that she says that the minute you think you know it and the minute you think you're secure, I know what's funny and they don't, you're finished, you're done, your good years are behind you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I asked her, another thing I tried to ask a lot of people, just sort of from a practical point of view, do you still get stage fright, and how do you deal with stage fright? And she said, I mean, she must have had one of the most storied comedy careers of the 20th century. I mean, working consistently for 50, 60 years, an innovator in the genre, an innovator for women, and she told me she gets nervous before every show. Whether it's doing an open mic in the village or playing Carnegie Hall, and that you can't even talk to her before the show. But it was such a part of her DNA and such a part of her identity and her lifeblood that she recognized that that is, like anxiety or self-doubt or insecurity, one of the strengths, because it means that you still care. It means that you still want to go out there and impress everybody, even though you're one of the most famous comedy minds and faces of the millennium, that you still have that hunger, and that when that goes away, that's when you start to slip, and that's when you should be scared, is when you're not feeling scared.
She also tells a story about Bill Cosby, who says that he told her once that he works 7 to 10 minutes, and then he goes on automatic if they don't like him. And she says that she fights to the end, that she would do anything to make them laugh.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen her. There's a great, great documentary about her.
Piece of Work.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
You know, where she always, even to the end, considered herself to be an actress. So even though she did all these incredible things in comedy, she was still, to the end, trying to prove something to everybody, you know? And beyond that, she was also an incredibly gracious and kind person, and everyone I know who's ever worked with her has the same thing to say. You know, she has a sort of bitter, biting personality, but in the end, she really just wanted to please people, and in the only way that she knew how.
I was recently in the build-up to the end of The Late Show with David Letterman. I was speaking to one of the longtime staff writers on that program, who told me that, you know, and you get into this in the book about YouTube and podcasts and social networks, and he said, you know, all of this stuff is great. It would be greater if I actually got paid for any of it. And
yeah.
I'm curious as to how you advise people how to deal with that of say, yeah, there's a lot of places that you can put your comedy, but how do you get money for it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a double-edged sword, because that is an incredible opportunity and an incredible, almost limitless platform for people, whereas that had not existed in the past. You know, my interview with Weird Al, he was talking about that he was up there grinding it out at coffee houses with an accordion night after night, and now you just post a funny video on YouTube and keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it, and if it's funny enough, people will notice. But it's definitely hard to know when you have value in the marketplace. You know, so many people have 100,000, 200,000 followers on Twitter that they're really funny and they're comedy celebrities on Twitter, but they're not getting paid. I don't think they should get paid either. But the trick is trying to find a way to convert that into something where you can get paid. And sometimes that means doing work that you didn't necessarily want to do, or starting at an organization or a place that you didn't necessarily want to work at. But I would tell people to, you know, recognize that everybody's putting stuff out there for free. The biggest corporations in the world are putting content out for free online. That's just part of the deal. But at a certain point, you have to be able to feel out when you have some value, and you got to start building some capital for yourself. So taking smaller jobs here or there, getting some experience, building up a reputation with people, and then, you know, over time, you can start to make money doing it. But it's tough. But the guild, you know, the Writers Guild of America is still trying to sort this out. You know, that's something that's really protective of workers and really legitimates or legitimizes, whichever the term is, digital content and digital writing. And they're sort of trying to feel that out right now, like where are the boundaries of that landscape and what constitutes guild work and how much can we charge for guild work? And because the problem is still that people don't really make money online. Everybody's just used to getting 99% of their content for free, no matter if you're HBO or, you know, the next Weird Al in your mother's basement. People are just used to getting free content online. So that's a problem that everybody has to crack, not just would-be comedians.
You have the many of the possible careers on the cover of the book of stand-up, improv, sketch, TV, writing, directing, YouTube. And I guess my final question for you would be, is there one of those, because we think of this way now, is there one of those that's trending?
Well, I think a lot of people have been trying to convert the size and scale of digital audiences to the money and visibility of TV or film audiences. So they've been trying to figure out how to get the 1.4 million people who follow the cute boy on Vine to come over and watch their cable show, but they just haven't figured it out. I don't know that there's one particular platform or career that is trending. I think the key is you have all of these abilities, all of these outlets to fine-tune your voice. And I would say that's the real opportunity for people, is not just to get a wide audience, but to have all these different ways to play with what your voice is, to play with what your point of view is, to explore how you tell your stories, and that the place where you wind up is going to be far more surprising and unexpected than the place where you started.
Of course, there may always be exceptions to this rule, but Larry King, the interviewer and broadcaster, once told me that the way you have to look at this is that talent will always win out. If you eventually, talent will always win. You may hit it for a day or 3 years or whatever, but if you're good, you'll win out. Do you believe that to be the case?
I definitely do. I mean, I think there are people who've made careers by sort of figuring out how to just maintain a place in the spotlight, but like you said, they eventually sink away. I mean, they could make enough money so that sinking away is very comfortable, but talent really wins out. And another thing that I'm finding is winning out, especially in this time where, you know, we are starting to see more diversity in writers' rooms and on the small screen and the big screen, is being a good person, being nice, and being somebody who's great to work with. Because I think the established way of doing things is sort of cracking, and we're finding that there's plenty of talent out there. People would rather work with people who are good than with people who are egomaniacs. So I think it's actually becoming a two-prong. Be really talented and try, at least, to be a good person.
Good advice.
Again, the name of the book is Funny on Purpose, The Definitive Guide to an Unpredictable Career in Comedy. It's published by Chronicle. Joe Randazzo is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.